Okay. You're on.
All right, I'm just going to put on a stopwatch so I can like take a look and see how long it's been as I'm going. There you go. Hi, my name is Penny Graver, recovering compulsive overeater. Thank you, Anne, for inviting me to come to speak at this meeting. I'm always grateful to have a chance to be of service. I guess I'll give you the background of my story. Always not my first fellowship. I started in another fellowship back in 2014. And I remember even right away, even the first couple like months or half a year into that program, that I started to have a little bit of trouble with food. And I remember even I think my grand sponsor saying something like, "Oh yeah, like that's very normal. A lot of times people like as they're leveling off, yeah, you might have something else." I think he mentioned even the Big Book mentioned somebody having like a piece of chocolate once in a while. And so whatever, and so it wavered. I wavered through most of it. Coming up just before COVID, I started to really have a problem with food where my weight went up and started to go up a little bit. And I got to the point where I was like, I see like my eating's really like I'm starting to really have trouble with eating. Do you guys have a problem with mentioning specific foods? You're allowed to do that here? Okay. So I remember like I'm Orthodox Jewish, so like the holiday of Hanukkah, we have donuts. There was like a day where like I had 27 donuts in one day. Because I had like for breakfast, I had like six donuts. Then by lunch, there was an opportunity to have donuts, and I had a bunch more. And then at dinner, we went out to some event at my synagogue, and there was just a table of donuts. And so while everyone else is milling around and doing stuff, I keep coming back to the table for another donut. And I calculated, I was like, holy heck. So I'm sitting there and I'm trying to like step six and seven this, like, oh, okay, maybe this is like just plain gluttony and it's a defect, and I can work the steps on it. I already have a program, I'm ready in the room for something else. So let me do that. And I was even trying to share this at the meetings. And I'll mention why that's important to me, but I wasn't getting anywhere. And then just before COVID, I did finally say, you know what, let me try. I prayed to my higher power, who I already had a connection with from my other program. And the response I got was, okay, try OA, give it a shot. My biggest reservations, I remember, was there was someone else in my fellowship who was in OA. And like he was telling me about how he checks his food into his sponsor three times a day. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to do that. And like restricted food plan, oh, too much. I don't want to do that. What helped me a lot, I don't remember who one it was that I found out, was hearing that like, oh no, I could pick my own food plan. I heard about the 301 plan, the very basic three meals, no snacks one day at a time. I'm like, okay, that's kind of manageable, that I can do. I don't have to have any other restrictions. I came into the rooms and I don't know, I did not fully identify, like connect with what people were saying. Even though I did try to like, I knew from my own fellowship, stay in the meetings for a few. I went to like three, four, five. I think I went to at least a few. And I never really felt connected. So I went back. I just said, okay, this is not for me. I'm just going to try to watch my eating again. Fast forward into COVID. The first part of COVID wasn't too bad. And then somewhere in the middle, I started having trouble again with food, and I saw my weight starting to go up. I'm what I'll say right now. I am what you would call, what AA refers to in the 12 and 12, in their 12 and 12, as a high bottom, low on the scale. I never gained a lot of weight. I think my highest I ever was about 25 pounds over my what should be like my normal weight now. But you should know about me is that I'm a personal trainer, and like for me it was a big bottom to go to like the doctor and my doctor to say, "Hey, Penny, you need to lose weight." Like how pathetic is that? Like this is what I do. I'm an expert in this, and like I'm being told by the doctor I need to lose weight. Like I'm out of shape. That's pretty pathetic. And then also like all my clothes. I had to get dressed every Sabbath or holiday. Get dressed up in my formal wear. And I got to the point where out of eight or nine suits and everything, nothing fit me except for maybe like the one which was the largest. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like I'm not getting a new suit. I can't handle this. And so it was middle of COVID. I'm like, you know what? Zoom had started. I'm like, if there's ever a time where it's easy for me to try OA again, it's now while there's Zoom. Why don't I give it a shot? And what helped me was I went into a meeting, and nothing's by coincidence. This is God running the world. They were reading the story in the back of the Big Book called Coming Out. I think it's called the Coming Out of Denial or Denial, something like that. I forget exactly. It had the title Denial. And basically, it's about this woman who I was very much able to relate to in her aspect of drinking, and that she had lots of crazy behavior. She had lots of powerlessness in her behavior and getting drunk, but she didn't have unmanageability because she hadn't lost a job. She hadn't lost her marriage. She still had a car in the garage. You know, she had her townhouse. So she didn't have like the gutter drunk experiences of the other alcoholics. And so she had a hard time seeing herself as an alcoholic. And that's what really clicked for me the most, because I'd been coming into the rooms and hearing all these people talk about, I gained 100 pounds, I gained 200 pounds, I have diabetes, I broke joints from going crazy with, I'm like, that's not me, that's not me, that's not me. But because I didn't have that unmanageability, what I did have was the crazy behavior. And I can look back now in my life and I can see that crazy behavior from the get-go. You know, there were points that I lied about food when I was younger. I remember sneaking food. I stole money to be able to get whatever food I wanted to get in like seventh and eighth grade. Just eating all the time to the point of like, you know, overstuffed, getting dessert, my parents putting away the cake and then slicing the cross section off so it doesn't look like anything's been taken, like another piece wasn't taken, except I would come back and do that over and over again. So by the time the whole day had gone by, there's only a third of a cake left. Obviously somebody's been eating from it. So a lot of that behavior, and what I can see now is that's the thing, is that I every time food became a problem for me, I would go to my other addiction, because my other addiction was slightly more primary for me than this one. And that's what I'd do, is I'd go on a diet and I'd exercise and I'd be acting out my other addiction. And so that's how I was able to maintain it. And it was only when I got into recovery and I finally didn't have that anymore as a way of acting out that I could, that I started to have problems with food, because food was then my only outlet when I didn't like life, when I didn't like what was going on. And thankfully for that story, I was able to come into the rooms. I started on the 301 plan. As I moved along in it, I got a sponsor. As I moved along in it, I started, working with my sponsor. My sponsor was very easygoing. I'd already gone through the steps in my own program. We went through the steps again. I could say the most that helped me was that even though I'd been in my other program for multiple years, I'd never re-gone through my past. And I did find that very helpful. And I learned that lesson now, that even if I'm in recovery, even if I'm working a step 10 and looking at my inventory every single day, there's something of value every few years of going back and looking at my whole life all over again, just to see if new onion layers of spiritual growth reveal new things. God, for whatever reason, decides to show me new things each time around. And that's what's happened. I had just finished another step 4 with my sponsor. And sure enough, there was a whole bunch of new stuff that I had not seen, not come to the radar the first time that I'd ever sat down, first two times that I sat and did step 4. What changed though? I felt like I was very sloppy in the beginning with my abstinence. I think I still, like, my biggest problem was always eating too much at meals, eating too much at social situations. That's what I wanted to talk about. Actually, I want to say also is that a lot of people, I've heard other people who come into the rooms, especially from the drink program, as I like to call it. And when I've heard people talk about it, I realize that most people talk about it, that they have like their social addiction when they're in social situations, and then they have their isolating addiction. That was the thing also. The reason why I didn't identify with most people in OA when I came into the live meetings before COVID is because they were talking about the fact that they binged in private, that they ate in private. It was all isolating. And that was my other addiction. My food addiction is like the way most people who I've heard in OA talk about their drinking addiction, is that they did it when they were around everybody. That's when I ate the most. When I was in public scenarios at a festive meal with people, if I was at like a wedding, whatever, and there was a big buffet and everyone's standing around talking, you know, and schmoozing at a smorgasbord, that's where I didn't want to talk to anybody. And so I would isolate by just sitting there and running around and trying all the stations. I didn't want to talk to anybody the whole time. That was my way of isolating within a crowd. And then similar at the table, when I was getting towards coming into OA, I was eating on the weekends because I couldn't stand being around my own family. Their behavior was driving me nuts. My wife's behavior was driving me nuts. My kids' behavior was driving me nuts. And so I would just go seconds, thirds. That's where I really see now what was going on as a pattern. I eat when I have trouble tolerating other people's behavior a lot. And so I was doing okay. I got about a year together of abstinence, and then I went to Israel in November time for my daughter's bat mitzvah. We all went as a family, and I went there saying, okay, I'm in OA, I'm in my other program, I'm prepared to do my tools every day, make phone calls, I'm going to make Zoom meetings. Thank God we have Zoom for all my different fellowships. I'm gonna stick to my food. And I was okay. Until we got to we went to a candy factory. I don't have a problem with most hard candy, but then they took out marshmallows. And the short version of the story is I ended up eating like 16 marshmallows in a row. And the thing was, before I ate even the first one, I actually asked my higher power and I said, God, can I have a marshmallow? These are really good. These are gourmet fresh. And the answer I got back was sure. And I had one or two, and then that turned into every one that he had thrown out on the table, which was 16. So I reset my sobriety, my abstinence. And when I asked God, I was like, God, what the heck? Because I have a relationship with God. I talked to him, right? And the whole point is like, that's the thing. I always find people have trouble when they're in like a tempting situation. They're like, God, and they're like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, oh, why am I struggling? I'm like, did you ask your higher power? Like, your higher power is the one you're supposed to be getting help from. So higher power, what happened? I asked you, why didn't you respond? And the response I got back was, I already hadn't been listening because my attitude was in the wrong place. Because over vacation, even though I was doing all those tools, I had lost the essence of step 12, which is that I'm supposed to be focused on giving to other people. And so my problem was that when I went on vacation, I went into vacation mode. And I was just thinking, how can I get the most out of this vacation? And that just opened me up to be able to listen to my addict tell me, yeah, sure, go ahead, you can eat marshmallows. When God had already told me before, don't eat things that are pure sugar anymore. You don't need them. Sugar, by the way, is now part of my essence plan. I don't eat anything that's pure sugar. And the other thing I got rid of was pastries. Anything that's a combination of flour and sugar that's sweet like that, cookies, donut, whatever, anything that's a pastry sweet stuff for that would be a dessert. I don't eat that anymore. I didn't find that I would binge, but the problem was that it got to be a terrible obsession of the mind. After, even after from the recovery I got from my first program, and then when I started getting that additional recovery of being free from food, you start to feel the freedom in your mind. You're aware of like, holy crap, my mind is empty. Like, wow, like I don't have all this noise going on. And I started to notice that every time I would have a pastry as part of a normal meal, it would just be burning a hole in my mind. If there was leftover, I'd be like, how can I get that at my next meal? Oh, how can I factor that in to make a supposedly abstinent meal? I'm gonna have a little bit. And then finally, it was like, it was just too much. And I was like, fine, forget it. God, with your help, I'm gonna get rid of, when I broke this abstinence, when this abstinence reset, that was my things. I said, I'm gonna give up pastries. And it was really hard. I remember I was like talking to people about it in OA, mentioning it every day. I have to give this up. It's really hard. I was praying to God, God, I'm afraid to like never have this stuff ever again. And the first few weeks, about a month, were tough. I remember there was one time we went out for dessert. My wife made this amazing dessert and I watched everyone else eat it. And I was so angry, I wanted to punch everyone in the face, but I didn't, thank God. And then after about a month, it kind of quieted a lot down. And I'm not going to say like every time I've ever been around a baked good that there's not a small part of me that's like, oh, that would be maybe kind of nice to have. But for the most part, I'm so grateful for the peace of mind that I have, that I don't have the obsession anymore eating away at my mind, that I'm for the most part, I'm glad to have given it up. I wanted to point out now that I'm mentioning talking to people in the rooms about in my other fellowship about food. I realized did not have nearly the same power on me. It didn't have the same effect on me when I came into the rooms of OA and started talking about my food. I can't describe it except to say that when I was speaking to people and I could see in their faces that when I talked about what I'd been doing with food, that they really got it. They knew about the juggernaut that I was dealing with right there more than other people. I don't know if other people say this. I don't know if other people from other fellowships feel like if they try to talk about some of their, addiction in a different room, if it doesn't register. But I have found that I have to talk about, and likewise, if I've mentioned my other fellowship, if I've mentioned my other addiction to people in OA, I feel like I often get blank stares. There's something about needing to talk about the specific drug of choice in the room of that same drug. In order to get for me that the impact, so that whatever that is that's happening, maybe on some spiritual level that I get from talking about food and the trouble I have with food in a room with other people who are struggling or have struggled with food. I'll shift a little now, go more into like the step work You know, I was noticing in the our invitation to you, that you know, again, I kind of agree and I disagree, right? Obviously, I agree, like it is most important, my relationship with God. God's the one who keeps me abstinent. I get that. But the most important proponent of having that relationship with God, or how I'd say God helps me the most, is I have to defer to like what it says in the big book, which is that those who recover are those who are, you know, those who don't recover are those who are incapable of being honest with themselves. I think honesty is by far the most important thing when it comes to my recovery every day. You know, step one, you know, I think, again, there's that bridge gap between, you know, what I know in my mind and what I feel in my heart, and my actions betray how I really feel, you know, and that's the thing, is that if the whole point is, where does abstinence come from? Where does sticking to my food plan come from? It comes from knowing that I'm a compulsive overeater. It comes from knowing that if I eat outside my food plan, I'm going to lose control, and I don't know where that roller coaster is going to stop, right? And that's, by the way, that's even more challenging for me, because the roller coaster never went that far. It never went that far. I have to, like the 12 and 12, step one says, I have to grab onto a lot of the stories I hear. Those are the stories that scare me the most, right? It's like, I'd say the biggest way that my addict wants to try to lie to me and get me to eat again is say, go ahead and break the food plan a little bit. Okay, maybe you'll eat badly for like that meal or for a day, but then you'll be okay. And I have to say, no, that's not true. I have no guarantee of that. I've heard the stories of people who broke their food plan and left the room for 10 years and gained 100 or 200, went up and down for the next years and weren't in the rooms for another 10 years. I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want to be the person who leaves for 10 years. I've heard the pain. I don't want to suffer that way. And so I have to remember that. I have to keep that honesty, is that I do not control it. All right. Any experience of control is an illusion. I am powerless. All right, my higher power is the one who controls it. If I have a sloppy moment and I didn't go out there, the metaphor I like to use is that I'm like the little kid in the tricycle where it has that handle on the back and the father holds the handle. If I eat a bite out of my food plan, that's like me trying to steer it into the street as a little kid on the tricycle. And what happens? My father holding out to the back of the handle, he pushes me straight on the sidewalk, right? That's God. God pushes me straight on the side. He stops it from going anywhere. I don't have any control. If I eat outside my food plan and I don't go crazy, I have to thank God for saving my life, because I just tried to wrestle with food and I should have lost, because I'm powerless, right? That's what I'm saying in step one. I'm powerless. I can't manage it. And one of the things I love about OA's step one is I love that their back half on the reading talks about the double entendre in step one, which is that even more important than recognizing that I'm powerless over food and that eating outside my food plan will make my life unmanageable, is recognizing that the very reason I ate in the first place working on changing me, right? That happens to be other one of the prevalent mistaken notions, right? Is that, okay, once I get food under control, now I can go back to managing the rest of my life, right? That's the other big lie. And that's the other reason that sends people out of the rooms, right? Because people are, oh, I'm only here to keep my food under control. So then once my food is under control and I'm abstinence, I don't have to be here anymore. No, I'm here because I'm out of control. I'm here because I can't manage me. And the day I forget then go back out there, I'm gonna suffer as a consequence. So that's really, to me, a good step one, real surrender, is that I can't manage my life, but the answer is not to change my life. The answer is I have to change me. That's what the rest of the steps are about. The rest of the steps are all about changing me, right? How's that going to happen? It's going to happen through a higher power, right? God restores me to sanity. I'm insane. Insanity comes from not being honest about a situation. Step three, surrender, right? What is surrender? I love actually what it says also in the OA's 12 and 12, right? That was a great definition of it, that surrender is giving up the right to act how I feel, right? Because that's what happens, that I'm in a tense situation. I'm mad at my wife, I'm mad at my kids, whatever it is. And how do I feel? I feel like eating. So surrender to me there means to give up the right to act how I feel, which is to eat. And instead, I have to go and do something else. I have to start looking at myself, four and five, right? I have to look inventory myself and say, well, why am I so mad that I want to eat right now? What's bothering me? What's behind the food? That's not really kind of peripherally there. It's very funny often, right? Whenever one of my addictions is flaring and I have the temptation to act on them, like whatever's bothering me is right here. And just by simply like being willing, saying the serenity prayer, right? Even the serenity prayer is an action of step three, right? God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I can't change whatever's bothering me in the world. Courage to change what I can. What are the things I can change? I can change my own attitude, and wisdom to know the difference. Same thing with the step three prayer. My sponsor pointed out to me that when we say the step three prayer, when we say, God, relieve me of the bondage of self, right? Well, how am I going to know what the bondage of myself is unless I inventory that in step four? Take away my difficulties. My difficulties are not my problems. My difficulties are my character defects, right? It's a call to work. To me, step three is a call to work those middle steps four through nine, on a regular daily basis. Because that's the whole point, right? Is that God's running the world. God's got everything under control. And if I have a problem, it's me who has to change. So I need to take a look at that in steps four through nine. Zoning in a little on step six, because it is step six. You know, to me, the core of step six, I think it's in the OA book, right? Also the principle, right, is willingness, right? And it's a really funny notion, willingness, right? Because there is the natural concept of willingness, right? Where do I naturally get willingness from? This is just human nature. Everybody's like this. It's the reason why so many of the addictive behaviors are socially acceptable. Drinking alcohol and getting drunk is acceptable. Eating, binging on food is perfectly acceptable in society. The point where it becomes unacceptable is when it becomes unmanageable. That's at the point, right? That's the point. So willingness is connected to unmanageability. Like I said about my original coming in, the reason what gets me to come into rooms and stay in the rooms is I have to hold on to the notion of that if I continue this behavior, if I go back to this behavior, it's going to make my life unmanageable. It's going to become painful. That's what gives me the willingness to change. But the funny thing is about that is that the natural aspect about it, number one, I don't want that natural aspect. I don't want that the first time, that, like I do with food. I don't want that the only way I get the willingness is from the natural way, from suffering through it. I prefer not to suffer. I don't know, like, why do I want to suffer, right? So, and the thing is, even with the natural way, the big book of AA shows us that that's not enough either, because they tell story after story and more about alcoholism, that there were people who had experienced the pain of alcoholism, and yet knowing that causing them to drink would make them suffer, they would conveniently forget every time, right? It says they have no mental defense against the first drink. And I connect that with what it says in the 12 and 12, which is that we need self-awareness, self-restraint. For me, I call it even reminding, right? That's the thing. What helps me when I step in front of the food? What makes me remember that I'm a compulsive overeater and that if I eat this food, it's going to make my life unmanageable, right? I can forget that. I can be so focused in on the food, I can forget everything else. All my information flies out the window. That's why I love what it says. There's a saying from my other fellowship. It says, knowledge isn't power. Power is power. It doesn't matter what I know. This is a disease of the mind. So on some level, I always need to have God's help, because even if I have the natural willingness because I've suffered from my behavior, I still need God to make me aware and to remind me in that moment of what I'm about to do. And I've seen that even with like dealing with character defects, right? Like one of my worst character defects is anger. And I learned very easily, oh, you know what you do when you're angry? Angry is most of the time when I'm angry, it's either because someone is doing something or saying something that's making me frightened that I want to feel fear about, or they're saying or doing something that I want to choose to feel badly about myself, right? And I learned what you're supposed to do is you say the simple formula. If it's somebody you can trust, if you can be vulnerable with them, you say, when you said this, I felt this, right? That's the magic formula for when I'm angry. I was like, oh, great, I have this knowledge. Well, guess what happened? The next time somebody said something that I wanted to get angry about, I just got angry. Everything flew out the window. I didn't remember it. That's why I had to key in on what it said in the 12 and 12 and step 10, right? Which is that I started telling everyone, I don't have awareness and I don't have the self-restraint in the moment. As soon as those emotional bullets are flying, I'm screaming, I'm panicking. I needed God to give me that clearness, that awareness. And it's the same thing with getting that natural willingness, is that I need God to remind me. Every time I step in the food and I happen to remember that I'm a compulsive overeater and I need to stick to my food plan, that's God helping me, because what would make me remember? I have a screwed up mind that wants to keep eating. So willingness, even if I have it somewhat naturally from my experiences, I have to on some level, again, point it back to my higher power, that I'm getting some kind of spiritual help. And I think that's the most important thing, because I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say this. I most people I say, oh, well, we don't know what the purpose of all this stuff is. I'll just say this. My experience is that in every fellowship that I've seen, everybody who has good, really good recovery, they all have a really good relationship with their higher power. And I've noticed what's going to drive that. What is going to drive that relationship? It comes from a dependence on that higher power, is that the more I see I need God's help, then that's what's going to drive my desire to have a relationship with my higher power. And the thing is that when my higher power helps me, right, it's not like when someone else helps me, right? If I ask a friend to lift the couch, I see them helping me lift the couch. When God helps me not to eat food, there's nothing there. I have to be the one, right? It's not tangible. It's not something I can visually see. I have to see for myself, well, what was it that I was missing spiritually? Was I missing the awareness? Was I missing restraint? Was I not remembering who I am, what I am? Did I not have the willingness? Because I'm forgetting what happens when I partake in this behavior. And if God doesn't give me all those four things, I will go back to that behavior. That's been my experience, whether it was food, whether it was my other addiction, whether it's character defect. When I'm missing one of those four elements and not getting that help from my higher power, I will continue to act on that behavior because I'm powerless against me. I guess I've spoken a lot. My mind is starting to kind of draw blank at the moment. So I don't know where our time. I wanted to leave time for people to share too. So I'll thank you for letting me share and turn the floor back over. Thanks.